This last week, for some reason, I was looking at Auditoria, musical productions, and I just decided to have a look and see what is happening to the Ambassador Auditorium that the church used to own many years ago before things went awry, and just to see whether or not it's still being used for concerts. One of the finest auditoria in this world is still being used for concerts, but it's now owned by H. Rock Church. And on their front page earlier this week was the slogan, Raising God's Army. So this morning I just want to look, in the time that's available to me, is, as a church, do we need to raise an army for God, as there are so few of us? It's interesting, if you think about it, what an army is. An army is a unit that's established to fight for someone, to protect someone or something. The British Army fights on behalf of her Queen, or their government, or her government, sorry. The Queen herself has no power to defend herself against a military attack. And when you look around the world at how many armies are actually currently doing battle, it does make you wonder. According to Wikipedia, the world's largest army is China, and that has 2.2 million operational forces. America is second with 1.3 million operational forces. But then, when you include the reserve army and the paramilitary capabilities, the organised militia and the organised police and everything, then China drops to fifth place, which was quite interesting, and America is a mere eighth. It was interesting to note that North Korea storms into first place. China, when you actually add everybody together, has 3.9 million. North Korea has 7.6 million people that it can call in the event of a war. In the world today, when you tot up everybody's armies and everybody's capabilities, there are 67 million people in combat readiness, ready to go to war. But God doesn't rely on numbers. And we're going to turn to Judges 7. And we're going to see very clearly how God looks on numbers and how in a battle he actually is limited by numbers to a certain degree. So Judges 7, start in verse 3. This is where Gideon has an army and they're going to go and fight against the Midianites. And in verse 3, now therefore proclaim in the hearing of the people, saying, whoever is fearful and afraid, let him turn and depart at once from Mount Gilead. And 22,000 of the people returned, and 10,000 remained. And the Lord said to Gideon, the people are still too many. Bring them down to the water, and I will test them for you there. Then it will be that whom I say to you, this one shall go with you, the same shall go with you. And whomsoever I say to you, this one shall not go with you, the same shall not go. So he brought the people down to the water, and the Lord said to Gideon, everyone who laps from the water with his tongue as a dog laps, you shall set apart for himself. Likewise, everybody who gets down on his knees to drink. And the number of those who lapped, putting their hands to their mouth, was 300 men. But all the rest of the people got down onto their knees to drink to the water. Then the Lord said to Gideon, by the 300 men who lapped, I will save you and deliver the Midianites into your hand. Let all the other people go, every man to his place. And it's interesting just to look at why that was done. Just go back up to verse 2. And the Lord said to Gideon, the people who are with you are too many for me to give you the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel claims glory for itself against me, saying, my own hand has saved me. So it's very interesting that the full army that was there, God couldn't use, because mankind being mankind would then start taking the glory and relying on their own hand and strength. God had promised to Israel, back in Leviticus 26, we won't go there, but you can read verses 1 through 8, that if they obeyed him and kept their laws, that none of them would be afraid. No one would make them afraid. Five of you shall chase 100, and 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight. Just look at what happened with David and Goliath. God used David to slay Goliath, and then the whole Philistine army fled. God does not need numbers and people to fight on his behalf. Turn to Matthew 13. Matthew 13. About whether or not, you know, people have to be called into the church now to raise the, in quotes, army that HROC were talking about. In Matthew 13 and in verse 10, Christ has been talking in parables, and the disciples came to him, "Why do you speak to them in the parables?" And he answered to them and said, "Because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For whoever has, to him more will be given, and he will have in abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away. Therefore I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. And in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled. Hearing you will hear and shall not understand, and seeing you will see and not perceive. For the heart of the people has grown dull, their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes have closed. Lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their heart and turn, so that I should heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For assuredly I say to you that many prophets and righteous men desire to see what you see and did not see, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it." Surely if Christ was building up an army to fight for him and needed the numbers in his church, then he obviously was the best person for the job. And if that was the case, then why did he speak in parables? It was to fulfill the prophecy that we have just read. Our enemy, Satan, is far stronger than any human. He is stronger than all of the other angels except for his two counterparts, Michael and Gabriel, who are his equal. And yet Satan can only do what God allows him to do. Why does God need an army to fight for him? As Mr. Armstrong said in The Plain Truth in October, November 81, in the article, A World at Peace, Mr. Armstrong says, "I have continually said that Jesus Christ did not come the first time on a soul-saving crusade. This is not yet the time when God is trying to save the world." God, however, is raising a church to educate and to teach the rest of mankind in the future. Turn, please, to 1 Corinthians 3. And we see here who gives the increase into the church. It is not down to us to go out and to raise an army. 1 Corinthians 3, and starting in verse 4. "For when one says, 'I am of Paul,' and another, 'I am of Apollos,' are you not carnal? Who then is Paul, and who is Apollos, but ministers through whom you believed, as the Lord gave each one of you?" "I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So then, neither he who plants is anything, nor he who waters, but God who gives the increase." And just going back to Mr. Armstrong in his November 22nd Bible study in 1980 in Tucson, Mr. Armstrong goes on to say, "Paul goes on to explain that he only planted the seed of the truth of God. Other ministers watered, but God gives the increase. God causes it to grow, and this is the main thing. God gives the increase. What is growing in us is the character of God. You start out with the character of Satan. Everyone does. God doesn't condemn that at the time of conversion. God doesn't condemn someone who, at the time of conversion, is educated Satan's way. They haven't known any different. It came naturally. That is why we are called it's called human nature. It is not something born in us, it is acquired. But it is God who gives the increase, which is the character and nature of God." And you can see another example of increase being given in Acts 2, verse 47. "We're praising God and having favour with all people, and the Lord added to the church daily those who were being saved." God used Mr. Armstrong at this end time, and through him called and raised up God's own church, who were at the peak about 140,000 members and co-workers. God used the church to proclaim the gospel of Christ to the world, to send Mr. Armstrong to world leaders, to produce millions of Plain Truth magazines, booklets, and have the leading religious TV program, to name a few of the achievements that God achieved through Mr. Armstrong and God's church. Look at the numbers. Look at who he has chosen to call into the church. Surely, if you are building an army, like the US Marines do, they pick the cream of the crop. There is no way humanly that the church could have had this reach and this impact without God's hand. Like Gideon's army, God uses a small army to achieve his purpose. In the Worldwide News, July 14th, 1980, Mr. Armstrong quite clearly says, we do not compete with other churches. We do not seek their members nor solicit any members directly. God adds such members as he calls and who come voluntarily. As God said to Gideon in Judges, lest Israel claim glory for itself against me, saying, my own hand has saved me. He has likewise said to us that no flesh should glory, and hence why he has called us. The whole approach of God is diametrically opposite to that of this world. God does not need an army to fight for him, to protect him, to go and convert people on his behalf. God does that. God needs a church who will humble itself before him and allow to be used, so that in the future we can educate and teach the rest of humanity God's ways. It's not about numbers, as Christ told Gideon. The people who were too many for him to be able to give the Midianites into his hand. It's about getting close to God, keeping his laws and his Sabbaths, and allowing God to use us and to train us so that he can use us as kings and priests in the future. We need to allow God to fight our battles for us and not the other way around. It's not about fighting God's battles for him. His arm is not shortened, and he has certainly not lost his power.